So we are really right now like teetering on the precipice of the Armageddon of library funding. And nobody is talking about it.
Welcome to Cattlecast with Capital Area District Libraries Executive Director, Scott Dimstra.
As Capital Area District Library passed our most recent operational millage, thank you voters, we wanted to raise awareness of public library funding and highlight the work of Every Library, a nonprofit organization that helps secure funding and works to ensure that libraries will be available for communities, for schools, and for colleges around the U.S. Joining us today is Patrick Sweeney, Political Director of Every Library. Patrick, thanks for joining us on Cattlecast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And I know I gave a very, very brief overview of Every Library in the introduction. Yeah. So could you talk about how Every Library formed and your mission as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So Every Library was formed in 2012, largely in response to the growing anti-tax and anti-government movement that was spawned during the Great Recession. So we saw a small but very vocal minority of Americans who wanted to eliminate tax funding for libraries or eliminate libraries in and of themselves because they are tax-funded government organizations. And what we found in launching our organization is a 501c4, which is essentially a social issue PAC for libraries, Political Action Committee for Libraries, is that libraries very rarely have the tools or the resources to advocate fully on their own behalf. So when libraries are attacked, there's very little that the library itself can do. The Friends or Foundation can take far more action than the library can, but often those are volunteer groups or they're organized around book sales and library fundraisers, but not necessarily library advocacy, and that's sort of a different thing. Most of the library campaigns and elections that we see are run by a handful of community members who just want to see children learn to read. They want to see economic opportunities for their community. They want to see decreased crime rates. They just want to see improvement within their community. And they don't have the tools or tactics or training. They're not political operatives. They've never run political campaigns before. And so we developed Every Library as an organization to provide tools and data and training for free to local libraries who are going to the voters. Since that time, we've grown. We've taken on some other fights on legislative issues, and we're deeply involved in the book banning issues that we're seeing today. But Every Library has helped libraries gain about $2.8 billion in stable funding through tax dollars through our work. And we've worked on about 127 library campaigns, about as many school library issues and non-ballot initiative issues, so legislative work, public library closure work, that kind of stuff.
Well, just as a bystander, the work that your organization does is phenomenal, because I can tell you we have a very short millage cycle, so we go out every 4 years and ask for our operational millage. If things go smoothly, as you said, there's a small group of core volunteers that help get it passed. If there's no issues around it, it's usually very easy. As soon as there's any type of conflict or a vote no group, it gets very, very complicated. And you are totally right. The volunteers who usually sign up are not prepared or not trained on how to respond to some of those vote no initiatives.
Yeah. And what you just said there, I think, is really, really important. We don't have a culture of advocacy in the library industry to a sophisticated level simply because we've never had to have it before.
Correct.
We could put out a couple of signs that say vote yes for the library and it would generally pass. That was a library campaign before 2008. Since then, we've really had to fight, and we're fighting against more and more sophisticated political operatives with more funding who are better organized and have huge tools at their fingertips from national organizations like Americans for Prosperity, Moms for Liberty, those kinds of groups.
And kind of related to that, just what do you see nationwide as the current climate in the U.S. regarding library funding and also library support?
Oh, we're screwed. Yeah. Not to be too blunt about it, of course. So 98% of library funding is political in nature. 98%. Before Every Library, there's never been an organization that worked on that 98% of library funding. Various state associations worked on state library funding issues, which is about 3 to 5% of that funding matrix. ALA worked on federal funding issues, which is another 3 to 5% of library funding. But 90% of library funding comes at the local level from local voters and local legislators. And there's never been an organization before working at that level and to build support and add capacity for working at that level. And because libraries haven't really had to fight for their funding before, we never took the time to look at voter perceptions of libraries. We've never done public opinion poll. We don't have voter models around who votes for libraries or why. The only two times that we have ever had a longitudinal study looking at voter support from libraries is in a study called Awareness to Funding by OCLC.
Yep.
It's an incredibly, incredibly important piece of research that, I mean, the fact that it's not required reading for every library in America just is beyond me. Because what they found is that between 2008 and 2018, we've lost about 20% of voter support for libraries, 20%. And that was 5 years ago that data set came out. So who knows where we are now? So right now, or in 2018, 5 years ago, 42% of Americans were unlikely to vote for their library, largely based on their beliefs on government and taxation and the role of government and taxes in American society, right? Very rarely is it like, I hate the library. We almost never hear that. It's always just, I love the library, somebody else should pay for it. So what's devastating is that once that number gets above 50%, which is the voter threshold that you need to win an election, so if more than 50% of Americans on average across the country are unlikely to vote for their libraries, that is the end of local library funding because voters aren't going to vote for it. Legislators aren't going to enact legislation in support of libraries because voters don't support it. So we are really right now like teetering on the precipice of the Armageddon of library funding. And nobody is talking about it.
Yeah, I read that OCLC report and presented it to our staff. And as you just talked about, our Operation Millage accounts for about 90% of our funding. Without it, we would cease to exist. And I think some of the no voters that we hear from are, well, there's other ways that you can pay for it rather than my tax dollars. Like the state will come in and rescue you, or the federal government will come in and rescue you. And
have Jeff Bezos pay for it.
Like, no, there is no one for us. Like your library will close without this. And it's trying to tell your story, but it's also advocating and having an advocate. Advocation campaign and also a group like Every Library to help with that. Because as you said, library directors, library boards are not trained to do this type of work or not familiar with it at least.
Yeah. You know, when I got out of library school, it was just before the recession, I got to manage the opening of a brand new library. And then I immediately had to lay off half my staff. We had to take 15% furlough days. We cut the library hours from 80 hours a week to like 30 hours a week. And what I quickly realized the year out of library school is that nobody had ever taught me where my paycheck comes from. Nobody ever taught me how I pay for the books on the shelf, and nobody taught me how to influence how to pay for books on the shelf. Yeah. That is such a fundamental misstep in the way that we train librarians who don't understand the legalities of fundraising, who don't understand the legalities of advocacy, the tools, tips, tricks of community organizing, the things that really power our libraries are missing from library school. I think that is wildly terrifying.
I wholeheartedly agree. And it's something that you learn from experience, but you also have to go through that experience and be open to it as well too. So I wholeheartedly agree. And I think it is, as you mentioned, one of the biggest threats to public libraries in the US as well too. And as we know, another threat is kind of the active campaigns against libraries based on the materials that they have. And we've seen a lot of that in Michigan, but I also know that it's happening nationally as well too. So what are you seeing as nationally regarding the threats to library funding based on the materials that libraries have in their collections?
Yeah. I mean, this is just an absolutely wild time right now. Mm-hmm. We have organizations like Moms for Liberty, who are very well financed, who have significant ties to the political universe. They have ties to legislators. They have ties to major funders. And they're spending millions of dollars coming out against libraries, or at least they're raising millions of dollars coming out against libraries. And that's just Moms for Liberty. There's dozens of small splinter groups. There are larger groups like the Heritage Foundation, Hillsdale College, PragerU, all of these organizations that are spending, I mean, they're outspending us probably 1,000 to 1 to push on this narrative that we're indoctrinating or grooming children, which is absolutely wild to me. And the public isn't falling for it as much as it sounds like, which is mm-hmm. kind of the high point. You know, we were just looking at some data from Florida where parents are given the opportunity to opt out in a number of districts to opt their students out of library books and reading materials, and less than 1% of parents opt their children out.
Wow.
And so we're being held hostage in this country by an ideology that only the highest one was 0.46%. So, you know, 99.56% of parents aren't in favor of book banning. I mean, yet those are the people, that 0.46% are the people that we're being held hostage by.
Yeah.
Who are restricting books. And the big thing is, you know, if this was what we're seeing, what we saw from like the progressive side of book banning, because there have of course been the progressive book bans, you know, we've seen books that have been attempted to be banned by progressives because, you know, they have the N-word in it, you know, mm-hmm. Huckleberry Finn, To Kill a Mockingbird, those kinds of things. But those were very unserious. They were not well organized. They were not well funded. The people who were running it weren't trained. And it didn't lead to government regulations about the books that Americans read. You know, we didn't have to take it serious because it wasn't serious. And they're using that justification that some books have been banned by progressives in order to enact real longstanding legislation that ensures that Americans are restricted in the books that they are allowed to access in their public libraries. And it's the vocal minority that's doing that. I think that's very, very terrifying that this is being allowed to happen, that legislators are taking this seriously. But what we're also finding here is that the reason that legislators are taking it so seriously is because this is a huge fundraising boom to so many legislators. You know, mm-hmm. if only 1% of Americans believe that books should be banned, and they each give $10, that's over $30 million in funding that they've been able to raise. That's real political money. So why would they give up this whole book banning thing, even though the public sentiment is turned against them, when it's driving so many of the activities that they're doing through those donations?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that I tried to express as well too, because as you mentioned, it's a very small minority of individuals who are against what the types of materials, primarily LGBTQ+ and other types of materials in libraries' collections, and accusing library staff of grooming their children. If there's an overwhelming majority that do not want to limit the types of materials and want their children to have access to them, let's hear those voices. And that's where I always say, like, you know, don't wait till it's too late mm-hmm. to express your support for libraries having open and accessible collections. Don't wait till there's a ban and an attempt to pull these materials, or the materials have been pulled from the shelves. Like, be active on the other side and advocate for First Amendment access to library materials.
Yeah. You know, and I think the other thing to remember here is that the book banners are holding up three to five books that they dislike. And they're using those books to validate the banning of over, well, depending on who's running the measurement, between 1,200 and 1,600 books on the basis that we're indoctrinating and grooming children for leftist ideals or whatever. But that's less than 1% of a book's, of a library's collection. Mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of cases, the library doesn't even carry those books. Like we saw in Bonner's Ferry in Idaho, the library doesn't even carry the 400 books that they're screaming at the library about. They don't even have them. And I think that's really concerning. And look, if libraries were indoctrinating children, the books that were being used to indoctrinate them would be more than 1% of the collection. You know, like you can't, nobody's indoctrinated. There's 1% of every library's collection in the world that I could find offensive. And myself, I wouldn't restrict access to them. But I think we can all find 1% of books in libraries that we find distasteful or unpleasing or not for our family. And to use that as a basis to shut down an entire library and deny access to all of the books in the library is absolutely preposterous.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I know, as you mentioned, a majority of individuals do. So if someone is a library advocate and a library mm-hmm. user, and they want to show their support to their local library and also libraries across their home state and across their country, what can they do to become a library advocate or to get involved?
You know, there's so many things. And it depends on people's political acumen. It depends on what they want to do. My biggest suggestion is to run for school board and run for library board or become appointed to either of those if in your community that those are by appointment. I think those are some of the biggest things. You know, we just saw a far right telecom company spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to have their school board members elected in Texas on the basis that they could restrict the materials in those schools. And if we don't have good people turning out to run for office, then we'll only have bad people in office. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll only have people who want to deny Americans their rights in office. And so I would love to see more people running for office. I would love to, of course, see more librarians running for office. I know our schedules are very busy in our libraries, especially with everything that's going on, you know. But I think that would be very high impact. I also think that it's really important to contact your representatives. If you go to action.everylibrary.org, there are petitions that you can sign that to send an email to your state legislators. You know, if you go to Save School Librarians, there's petitions there for the school library book banning. So I highly recommend those. Of course, donations are always great. Large donations are really key to a lot of this. And I hate coming on and always talking about fundraising, but it is really the key aspect to this. You know, we are facing people with immense political power and influence. And the only way you get political power and influence in this country or most others is through people or money. If you don't have one of those two things, you don't have political power or influence. And the library industry as a whole does not have a national database of supporters that they can call on to push back against these book bans, nor do we have millions and millions of dollars to push back against these book bans. And without one of those two things, I don't see a path towards winning. So I'm going to say donate to every library, of course. You know, there's organizations like the Florida Freedom to Read Project, the Freedom to Read Project in Texas. You know, that need funding and need support. If you would like to start an anti-book banning campaign in your community, every library can provide you with pro bono support to do that. We can provide you with tools, data, access to political operatives, basically give you access to everything that these book banning groups are providing access to for their small communities. You know, these are national organizations descending onto small towns, disrupting those small towns, utilizing the full force of their resources. And we would like to help local community members push back themselves in a lot of the same ways.
And I'll just, for our listeners, we will have a link to Every Library's website where you can get more involved and get more information on Every Library as well, too. Patrick, I know it's really hard to predict the future, But what advice do you have for libraries that are planning future millages or dealing with challenges in their communities?
So that OCLC report found that library support is not based on library use. Library support is not based on whether or not somebody has a library card. They found that the one thing that impacts people's desire to take action on behalf of the libraries, the single biggest motivating factor for people to take positive action on behalf of their libraries is their belief and their belief about and their relationship to their public librarian. When I say librarian too, I mean everybody in the library, everybody that the public believes is a librarian. So everybody from page to director to friends group to the guy that lives next door to the library, you know, everybody.
You can verify that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the public's belief and relationship to those people working in that library is what's going to motivate people to take action. So go out to your community groups, go out and meet people, send your friends group members out to just speak, shake hands, kiss babies, you know. If 98% of library funding is political in nature, and the number one thing that motivates people to take out, to go out and take positive political action on our behalf is our relationship and belief about our librarians and whether or not we like it, librarians are candidates for our jobs, right? Because that funding is what ensures that we have our jobs. So I know librarians didn't sign up to be political candidates. I know we didn't sign up to be political, but that's, you know, you're finding out now because they should have taught you this in library school. But go out and behave as a candidate, make as many friends as you can, talk to as many people as you can, shake as many people's hands as you can, build those relationships years and years before we need them. Because the biggest thing that we see in the data turning people out against government organizations is simply their mistrust and lack of communication, lack of understanding with those government organizations. Every time we've had a librarian, library director or a library doing a very good job with public outreach, we don't see these kinds of attacks. We see them winning campaigns. We see them winning elections. We see them being well-funded over and over and over again. That is the hard work of funding our libraries. You know, if it means that you have to make that hard decision of, you know, maybe we have one less story time a week this year so that we can go to, you know, one new community event every week this year, so that next year we can have, you know, we'll have the funding for three more story times a year. Maybe that's a decision you make. You know, maybe we cut back on some of the things that we're paying for to give us the resources to ensure that we can pay for more later. I mean, that's going to be a difficult decision for a lot of people. That's going to be, you know, a hard pill to swallow. But honestly, we need to rethink the way that we are budgeting and allocating our staff time and resources for the future success of our organizations.
I wholeheartedly agree in the advocacy and even meeting with elected officials. And I think one of the things that we are lucky to have in the state of Michigan is kind of bipartisan support for libraries. And so it is not kind of one party or the other supporting libraries. We have strong advocates in the Republican Party and strong advocates in the Democratic Party as well, too. Yeah. So I think it's very important to meet with those elected officials and tell your story about the library as well, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that also kind of, I think, brings up an interesting point. You know, libraries aren't a partisan issue. You see support from the right and the left of politics all the time. And the thing that influences that is the language that we use to describe our work. You know, we're reaching a Tower of Babel moment in American society where the right and left can't even talk to each other because they're not even speaking the same language anymore. I think that is very terrifying. But when you look at the library industry, 78% of librarians are registered on the progressive side of politics. And what that means is we've created a progressive language around libraries, even though libraries are fundamentally very conservative organizations. You know, that we're very even Christian oriented organizations. Like we hear all this, oh, libraries don't have Bibles, they hate Christianity. But when you look at the Dewey Decimal System, the system that classifies all knowledge in human history, 10% or nearly 10% of it is dedicated to just Christianity. Only 1% of it is dedicated to all the other 4,000 religions that have existed on the planet, you know, 1%. You know, if we're indoctrinating anything, it's Christianity, you know. we're etched into the bedrock of American society by our founding fathers. You know, we are a longstanding institution. We are a hand up, not a handout organization. Mm-hmm. But the way we talk about it is a lot of handouts. Like the big example that I always have is if I tell my dad, I'm not going to ask who he voted for because I'm pretty sure I know. But if I ask my dad, or if I tell my dad, you know, we are helping connect poor people to government services, he will go ballistic, right? But if I tell my dad that I'm helping poor people pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get back to work, he's all on board.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm doing the exact same work in my library. That doesn't change my values. That doesn't change the value of the libraries. That doesn't change my day-to-day work in the library. It just changes the language that I'm using to describe my work in the library. And I think we really need to get serious about understanding how to talk about libraries in language that crosses the political spectrum.
I wholeheartedly agree. And Patrick, we talked about some pretty heavy topics here. And although your recommendations might be heavy or they might be light, we always end with a library type question. And so do you have any titles that you're reading, you're watching, or you're listening to that you would recommend? So these can be recreational reads. They can be work-related reads, anything that you do to, say, unwind after work. So,
You know what I do is I watch Gardener's World with Monty Don to unwind.
Love it. Yes.
I'm a big gardener, but I mean, I haven't read for fun in so long. I couldn't possibly tell you, unfortunately. Yeah. My favorite book though, I'll tell you, is, Don't Tell Mom I Work in the Oil Wells. It's a really funny book. So if you're looking for a very light, funny book, I recommend that one.
That's great. Great recommendation. So Patrick, thank you again so much for joining us for Cattlecast. It was a wonderful discussion and also hopefully eye-opening for our listeners as well too. Kind of libraries are very complex institutions. And I think we're kind of viewed very simple on the front of it. But once you kind of look at our funding, look at our makeup, and look at kind of the current political climate that we're dealing with, it's very complex issues that we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
And this episode with Patrick from the political director of Every Library is a special two-part podcast where we also had another episode with a board president from Patmos Library on the west side of state in Michigan, Larry Walton. So I encourage you to listen to not only this episode, but that other episode as well too, and hear their story about the issues that they're going through trying to get their library millage renewed. As always, thank you so much for listening to Cattlecast.
Don't miss another great interview. Subscribe to the Cattlecast podcast and share it with a friend.
Hey, it's Dee Dee in the Morning with Dee Dee's weekly download from Capital Area District Libraries. This week's title is One Life by Megan Rapinoe, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team forward, Olympian, and social justice activist, presents her story from childhood to pro soccer to the fallout from supporting Colin Kaepernick and the fight for equal pay. To stream or download this or other featured titles, just visit cadl.org/Dee Dee.
Stacks 92.1.